On this 12th day of December 2011 in San Diego, we are reading from Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is, transcended by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. We are in Chapter 6, entitled Dhyana Yoga, and we're in text 27. Prashantamanasam yenam yoginam sukamuttamam upaiti shanta rajasam brahmabhuta makalmasham. Translation: the yogi whose mind is fixed on me verily attains the highest perfection of transcendental happiness. He is beyond the mode of passion. He realizes his qualitative identity with the Supreme, and thus he is freed from all reactions to past deeds. Purport: Brahmabhuta is the state of being free from material contamination and situated in the transcendental service of the Lord. Mad bhaktim labhate param. Bhagavad Gita 18:54. One cannot remain in the quality of Brahman, the Absolute, until one's mind is fixed on the lotus feet of the Lord. Savai mana krishna padara vindayoho. To be always engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord, or to remain in Krishna consciousness, is to be factually liberated from the mode of passion and all material contamination. Om jnana timarandasya jnanandana shalakaya chakshu unmilatam mena tasmai shri gurave namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance, my spiritual master Srila Prabhupada opened my eyes, the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisance unto him and all members of Sri Parampara. So, since we all have books, we can turn to 1854, which is a famous verse about the Brahmabhuta platform. But why don't we look at the three verses before that? Because this verse that we just read, text 627, gives the prerequisites and also the qualities of one who's in Brahmabhuta. So in 51 to 53, Krishna gives a more expanded description of who qualifies to be on the Brahmabhuta platform. Being purified by his intelligence and controlling the mind with determination, giving up the objects of sense gratification, being freed from attachment and hatred, one who lives in a secluded place, who eats little, who controls his body, mind, and power of speech, who is always in trance, and who is detached, free from false ego, false strength, false pride, lust, anger, and acceptance of material things, free from false proprietorship and peaceful. Such a person is certainly elevated to the position of self-realization. And the famous verse, Brahmabhuta Prasanatma, one who is thus transcendentally situated at once realizes supreme Brahman and becomes fully joyful. He never laments or desires to have anything. He is equally disposed toward every living entity. In that state, he attains pure devotional service unto me. So from that description in 51 through 53, we can see that there's echoes of what Krishna describes in the sixth chapter. Eating little, self-control, all these things. So this is one of the descriptions in this chapter of the great benefit of focusing the mind on Krishna. Sukamuttamam. This is what we're all looking for, the ultimate happiness. And it comes from this fixing the mind on Krishna. The mind is peaceful. Shanta rajasam. The mode of passion is pacified. And one attains that Brahmabhuta platform, which is free from all sinful reactions. So much of the practice that we have, Krishna consciousness is so vast, you can look at it from different angles, and it makes sense from different angles. This particular chapter is from the yogic platform. It's very much yoga, right? Dhyana yoga. And it involves, ultimately, the mind, fixing the mind, controlling it with the intelligence and practicing until one is fully absorbed in thought of Krishna. And indeed, you can look at the whole practice that way. Even the things that we do, the activities that we perform with our senses, the hearing process, the festivals, you can see it all as a way in which we're meant to have the mind absorbed in Krishna. And it's not easy, as we've been reading in the morning. The false ego manifests in all of these varieties of ways. What is it? Dehindriya, prana, mana. I think that's the last verse we read. The false sense of self is not just the bodily concept, or unless you want to take the body as also the subtle body. But just the gross body is just the beginning. The real difficult part is the internal identification, you know, with, you know, all. If someone is say 40 years old, they've already experienced so much in this world, right? An ordinary person. They have a family, they have a place where they grew up, they have a culture, a race, right? Some kind of religion that they, you know, more or less like religiosity, language. Now, all of that you might not tell from just looking at the person outside. You can tell the race and the gender, you know, and stuff. But there's so much inside. There's so much of the subtle body that really forms the core and the difficult to break sense of the self, sense of the false ego. So every aspect of our being has to be engaged. The body, the senses, the intelligence, the mind, certainly, you know. Our sense of who's our family, who do we care about, you know. You know, what's important in life, what's not. It all needs to be purified and made and Krishnized, Prabhupada's famous word, Krishnized, you know. Not an easy thing to do. That's why Prabhupada always encouraged how from the very childhood, you know, Pallad says, Komara Achade Pragyo Dharman Bhagavatam, yeah. Children, especially, you know, young children, they absorb so much of their sense of identity and everything from their environment, the parents, you know, who they're with, you know. And so it's actually a great boon, should be, but it, you know, in an ideal society, to grow up in Krishna consciousness. Because that's where you identify yourself as that, you know. Whereas ordinary, and there's not a lot of reformation, there's still a lot of work to do. Because, you know, you still have to train, you still have to be disciplined. But you're not carrying all that other baggage with you, you know, that bubbles up that you have to purify. So here Krishna is describing, you know, a high state of existence, a perfection of the yoga process. This word shanta comes up again and again. In this verse, it's twice in this verse. Shanta, what is real peace? You know, in the Bible, I have this phrase, the peace that passeth all understanding. And there's a few little biblical phrases that I know, very few. But that's one of the ones that it's meant to... Is that door closed? Oh, I'm smelling from here. Sorry. the aroma. But you know, what is that peace? You know, it's not just external peace. It's not just the absence of war, but it's an internal state that's described in the second canto, a second chapter. Freedom from all material desires. You know, complete freedom from fear. That also has to be part of it. You know, freedom from fear, freedom from material desires. It's described in Shantaras. It's kind of a Shantaras. Shantaras means you're completely satisfied and blissful just thinking of Krishna and completely free of any tinge of material desire. This, you know, it's a high state. It more or less describes this Brahma-Bhuta platform, Brahma-Bhuta. So, Brahma-Bhuta prasannatmana shochati nakatana prasanna. Let's think of that word. This is so often described, you know, of the character of one who's advanced. Evam prasanna manaso bhagavad bhakti yogadaha. And near the end of that nice section in the second chapter, first canto, this is a highly advanced state. Prasanna manaso bhagavad bhakti yoga, bhagavad tattva vijnana. It comes in a stage of realization. So what is that prasanna? You know, I looked up this word. Now, part of it is being joyful, naturally joyful. Prabhupada described, he's translated that way in 1854. That's often the way it should. But if you look it up, there's other nuances of meaning, you know. And one of it is to be clear. The mind is very clear and peaceful. It's just like an ordinary mind, like Lord Chaitanya used the analogy of the dusty mirror, right? Chaito dharpana marjanam, you're cleansing that mirror of the mind. Well, Krishna uses the analogy of the mirror and also the smoke and the fire. how it's obscuring the real brilliance of the fire. So our minds would never actually understand what it means to have a perfectly clear and peaceful mind in the conditioned state. There's always that element of rajas, you know, of material desire, the element of darkness and ignorance, you know, and the sattva gun is where it's clearing a little bit, the light is starting to shine, you know, but still there's always some tinge of rajas and tamas, even in the mode of goodness. So Brahmabhuta means pure goodness, called the Vasudev state, in which Vasudev appears. And that's to have this pure, peaceful and pure and clear mind, you know. And the natural, joyful state of the soul is experienced in that state. So Brahmabhuta, Prasannatma. Now, the basic definition is beyond the modes, you know, transcendental to the modes, that's Brahmabhuta, Prasannatma. Nashochiti nakankshiti. The shochiti is, it means to lament. You know, that's the first instruction of Krishna to Arjuna, shochana vashochastram. You're lamenting for what shouldn't be lamented. Basically, lamentation, no matter, if someone's lamenting, they're lamenting for what shouldn't be lamented for. Lamentation is a sign of really the mode of ignorance. You know, but just think about it. This whole world is full of lamenting people, you know? And if they're not lamenting, they're lusting after something. You know? Kankshati, intense desire, aspiration for something material. And it can be subtle, but still material. Some position, some fame. Just think of the Olympics, you know, every 4 years. They staggered it, so you got every 2 years, you got the Winter Olympics, the Summer Olympics, Winter Olympics, Summer Olympics. You know? They work so hard, they torment the body. It's some tapasya in the mode of ignorance, right? When you torment the body for something material. And for what? You know, fame and you hope some fortune also, right? Fortune follows fame. If you become very famous, you can easily parlay that into some, you know, money. But so much, you know, people are aspiring for that. And so many don't make it, right? They work so hard, so they lament, oh, you know, I was a champion skier, I was going so well, and I broke my leg, now I can't. There's a devotee in Toronto, a very good friend of mine, an Indian fellow, who was a top flight cricket player in India. You know, he grew up in an ordinary Hindu pious family, wasn't a devotee by any means, but he, you know, he knew about Krishna's and that, but his real passion was cricket, you know, and he was a top flight computer engineer as well. So he's a top-flight cricket player in India, then he comes to Canada, and he's a top-flight cricket player in Canada. I mean, countrywide, nationwide, famous, you know. He has all, I saw his apartment, he has all of these trophies, you know. But he had the good fortune of getting an injury, and so he couldn't play at that level anymore. And he told me how it was so difficult for him, you know, because he couldn't do what he used to be able to do, couldn't limit it. And his, of course, that was the beginning of his good fortune. But the real good fortune was that this wonderful devotee, who's I think gone back to Russia now, but he was there for years in Canada and Toronto. And he would go around door to door. There's so many Indians, you know, it's huge, millions in the greater Toronto area. Because it's part of the, what do they call it, the British Empire used to be. So you don't need a big visa to go there from India. You can just settle, you just move there, you know. And it's not a green card or anything. So anyway, there's many, many big apartments building, you know, with so many Indians. And he would just go door to door and sell books. And he came to this fellow and sold him a Bhagavad Gita. He was polite, you know, yes, okay. And gradually, you know, he visited the temple and became a devotee. And, you know, he was able to transcend that disappointment, obviously. He's initiated now. He got initiated. Very nice devotee. Every time I go to Toronto, I stay with him. But, you know, you forget about that if you're in the movement for a while, how powerful that is, that desire to succeed in something, whether it's, you know, something prominent like sports or business or this or that, high school kids, you know, I mean, it used to be, in my day, you had a girlfriend, boyfriend, but now it's like this, you know, with the Facebook and the whole thing, and, you know, and it just seems to be more intense. There's even more suicides going on than in my day. But it means everything. You know, that's all I know. She loves me, she loves me not. He loves me, he loves me not. You know? And all of that fits into these two categories. Shochati, kanchati. Shochati, kanchati. So imagine being free from that. Just, you know, that's Brahma Buddha stage. You're not lamenting. Even, you know, some disease comes, you're not lamenting. You're just living on that, in that spiritual realm of being fully confident of your eternal life and taking your pleasure from thinking of Krishna, serving Krishna, glorifying Krishna, you know, which doesn't end. Brahma Buddha, the short, samak sarveshu bhuteshu, and seeing everyone equally as a spirit soul. And where possible, giving them Krishna. That's the devotee's life. Age doesn't matter, language doesn't matter, everyone's a spirit soul. Even the mosquitoes or the mosquito hunters that come by, you know, give them a little basada. Samak sarveshu bhuteshu. How important that is. I mean, this whole world is a world of distinction, duality. They belong to this clique, that clique, you know, age discrimination, racial discrimination, right? You know, the Mexicans are coming to take our jobs, but really we want them to come and, you know, pick the fruit, but, you know, so many, you know, they're Mexicans, right? It's crazy. We don't care. They're all spirit souls, Chennai Krishna, right? I mean, you actually can get that, you know, even if we're not on that platform, Krishna consciousness is so wonderful that immediately you see, oh, that this, those distinctions are crazy. You know, that's the problem, is all of this duality. So, samaksa mad bhaktim labhate param. And in that state, one really, you know, begins devotional service. Sometimes Prabhupada would say you can really serve Krishna when you're on the Brahma-Buddha platform. You know, until that time, we're trying to reach that platform. And, you know, we're doing service, but to really experience bhakti as it is, reciprocation, you need to be transcendental to the modes. You know, and that's so this is one way of doing it. Not really practical for us, as we'll read in the next few verses, but the description of the state of the perfect yogi also applies to the bhakti yogi. The ultimate happiness, Brahma Buddha platform, completely peaceful, and the passions quieted, or, you know, this is, we're aiming for that, you know, and it's truly miraculous when you think about it. I mean, who could imagine you'd be qualified to perform advanced yoga? You know, we don't have any pre-qualifications, but the one qualification that we need is sincerity, that we really want to progress and we're willing to undertake the minor austerities necessary for success. Okay, any discussion on this verse? Nice description of samadhi. Yunjanevam sadatmanam yogi vigata kalmashaha sukhena brahma sansparsham atyantam sukham ashnute. Thus, the self-controlled yogi, constantly engaged in yoga practice, becomes free from all material contamination and achieves the highest stage of perfect happiness in transcendental loving service to the Lord. Purport. Self-realization means knowing one's constitutional position in relationship to the Supreme. The individual soul is part and parcel of the Supreme, and his position is to render transcendental service to the Lord. This transcendental contact with the Supreme is called Brahma Sansparsha. That reminds me of the previous chapter. 520, the same language is being used here in Krishna. Let's see, text number 20, 21. Look at text 521. We have Vaya sparsheshu asaktatma vindatyatmana yatsukam sab brahma yoga yuktatma sukam akshayam ashnute. You see that? So let's see. Here it says, what did we just read? 28, right? Yeah. So again, it's brahma sangspar atyantam sukam ashnute. Sukam akshayam ashnute. The same words are used. You see that? So this theme is coming up again and again. It's a question of sparsha, you know. We're touching things, even with your consciousness. You're reaching out. You remember we had in the morning class, quite a few verses back, how the mind enters into the objects of the senses and the senses into the mind? And when you perceive something and you experience and you meditate upon it, there's a certain way in which it enters into your consciousness, isn't it? Sometimes you'll dream about it, you'll remember it, right? You're touching it. You're touching things with your consciousness through the senses, isn't it?
I don't understand the first part. I can understand how something enters your mind. How does the mind enter the object? What does that mean?
Well, you know, what that must mean is that you're thinking about all the details of the thing. You know what I mean? And I guess it seems like, well, if you do that, then that's entering into your mind. You know, I'd have to think about it. Because it seems to work the other way. That you take the things in. Yeah. But in any case, we'll think about that. But that's the song Sparsha. It's very graphic, actually. Because, you know, Sparsha literally means, you know, touch, like this, you know. But to think of realization of Krishna in those graphic terms, you know, how it's not just a question of physically touching Krishna's body, but everything about Krishna is very visceral, ultimately. In other words, the very senses, you know, sensations that we experience every day, right, the seeing, the hearing, the touching, and etc., those are meant to be transferred to Krishna, to Krishna's form, to his entourage, to the whole world. Just like here, when you go outside, you know, there's a certain smell, there's a certain look, there's a certain feel, it's cold, it's the water and all this stuff. So all of that is there in the spiritual world, in its perfected form, you know. So that's the Brahma Sangsparsha. And that's what's being taught, Brahma Sangsparsham. Literally to keep in touch. You know, yoga means to be connected, you know, to be in touch with Brahma, with the Supreme Absolute Truth at every second, through our consciousness and through our senses and every other way. So here it says that here's more benefits. Vikata Kalmasha, he's emphasizing that all the sinful react. There's no sin. There's no residue left. You know, sin, we're kind of weighed down by the sin. So that's all completely purified. Vikata Kalmasha. And happily, sukhena, in transcendental happiness, in touch with Brahma, one experiences, tastes, ashnate literally means to taste, you know, the highest happiness. Well, I mean, this kind of statements should really spur us on to, you know, greater efforts to experience these things. You know, and it's all there in bhakti. All of this that he's describing here is there if we perfect the chanting of the holy name. So he's, you know, he's giving all of these wonderful descriptions of perfection, and then Arjun, you know, representing us, says, "Ah, but I can't do it. You know, it seems impossible. How are you going to grab onto the mind? You know, it's so difficult to control." So that'll come in a few verses. Okay, going on. Sarvabhutastam atmanam. Sarvabhutani chatmani. Ikshate yoga yuktatma. Sarvatra samadarshanaha. A true yogi observes me in all beings and also sees every being in me. Indeed, the self-realized person sees me, the same Supreme Lord, everywhere. Report. A Krishna conscious yogi is the perfect seer because he sees Krishna, the Supreme, situated in everyone's heart as the Supersoul of Paramatma. Ishwarak sarvabhutanam riddeshe arjuna tishtati. The Lord in his Paramatma feature is situated within both the heart of the dog and that of a Brahmin. The perfect yogi knows that the Lord is eternally transcendental and is not materially affected by his presence in either the dog or a Brahmin. That is the supreme neutrality of the Lord. The individual soul is also situated in the individual heart, but he is not present in all hearts. That is the distinction between the individual soul and the supersoul. One who is not factually in the practice of yoga cannot see so clearly. A Krishna-conscious person can see Krishna in the heart of both the believer and the non-believer. In the Smriti, this is confirmed as follows. Atatvat chamatritvat chaatma hi paramo harihi. The Lord, being the source of all beings, is like the mother and the maintainer. As the mother is neutral to all different kinds of children, the Supreme Father or Mother is also. Consequently, the Supersoul is always in every living being. Outwardly also, every living being is situated in the energy of the Lord. As will be explained in the seventh chapter, the Lord has primarily two energies, the spiritual or superior and the material or inferior. The living entity, although part of the superior energy, is conditioned by the inferior energy. The living entity is always in the Lord's energy. Every living entity is situated in him in one way or another. The yogi sees equally because he sees that all living entities, although in different situations, according to the results of fruitive work, in all circumstances remain the servants of God. While in the material energy, the living entity serves the material senses, and while in the spiritual energy, he serves the Supreme Lord directly. In either case, the living entity is the servant of God. This vision of equality is perfect in a person in Krishna consciousness. So this reminds me of the description of the different levels of devotees. Sarvabhutesu yak pashyet bhagavat bhavam atmanah bhutani bhagavatyatman yeva bhagavata bhagavatottama. I think the highest, I forget the last line. But this is exactly what he's describing here. To see the Lord in everything and everything in the Lord. And that's the next verse. You know, to see God in everything and everything within God's energy. That's really the, you know, divine vision. And it comes through Krishna consciousness, through actually acting as if that were true. In other words, it is true, but we can't see it now. But if we act that way, just like the, you know, preaching or book distribution or Harinam, you know, you begin to see that these are all this, you know, people are out there, they're in the different modes of nature, they're all spirit souls, and they're all related to the holy name, right? We're giving the holy name to everybody, giving book, allowing anyone to come and take a book, right? This is Sarvabhut, this vision, what is it? Sarvabhuta stamatmanam, seeing the Lord within everyone, is practically realized when you try to give Krishna to everyone possible. That's why Lord Chaitanya says, you know, Yare Dekatai Krishna Upadesh, whoever you meet, whoever you see, give them Krishna consciousness. You know, and in this way, become a guru and deliver this land. He gives that instruction to Kurma Brahma, when he met him. Kurma Brahman was a household. He wanted to go with Lord Chaitanya. He said, no, you stay here. You know, you stay and here's, you just do what I, you know, you become a guru here and deliver this land by giving Krishna consciousness to everybody. So that, you know, that desire to do that is part of what Krishna is, he's constantly doing this. You know, here's this yoga principle, but there's also a society we live in. That's part of what it means to be Krishna conscious. To see everything and everyone in relation to Krishna. And not just to see him, but to act in the appropriate Krishna conscious way with everything. That means, there's a way of acting with the out-and-out demons and atheists, and it's to ignore them, you know. It's to not get entangled with them. That's a proper relationship. That's the Madhyama Adhikari, right? And just, you know, to ignore the those who are out-and-out enemies of God. But there's a whole bunch of people who are innocent. It doesn't mean that they're not sinful, having sinful reactions, and that they're not headed to hell unless we help them. But they're innocent in the sense that they're not declared enemies of God. They're more or less confused, just like we were. Totally confused and helpless, you know. But they may have some little smidgen of piety that will enable them to relate to a devotee in a positive way. You know, maybe they'll dance to the kirtan, maybe they'll take a book, maybe they'll give a donation, you know, whatever it is. Some contact that can start their devotional life. And this is where we practically realize what this injunction, which comes again and again. I'm thinking of the end of the 11th chapter. There's so many. But I remember reading this verse at the end of the 11th chapter, where the first line, probably, this verse more or less summarizes the whole purpose of the Bhagavad Gita. I said, wow, okay, I better memorize that one. Mat karma krin mat padamo man bhakta sangha bhajataha. Nirvaira Savabhuteshu Yaksamamiti Pandava. And it has that idea, having no enmity toward anyone. Yet Mat Karma Kunin, always doing my work. Mat Paramo, always seeing me as the ultimate goal of life. Mat Karma Kunin, Mat Paramo, Mat Bhakta Sangavarjitaha. You know, being my devotee, taking devotional zoo. And being free of sangha. In this case, it means material attachment or bad association. Nirvaira Savabhuteshu, seeing all living entities as the friends, or, you know, not having any enemy or enmity toward anyone. Yaksamam eti pandava, such a soul comes to me, certainly, at the end of life. Great verse. But there's many like that. 12th chapter also, he talks about that. That even the impersonalists will eventually come to me, provided that this, and they do good for everybody. You know? So even here, when he's describing the yogi, he's out alone in the jungle, right? This is what he described. But at the ultimate stage, you have to relate to people and other living entities. And here's how you do it. You see me in them, and you see them in me, because they're all situated in my energy. Now just contrast that with the materialistic vision, the scientific vision, the reductionist vision, in which the spirit is drained out of everything. You know, consciousness, it's obviously just a result of chemical reactions in the brain. We measured it. You know, we can stimulate this and, you know, you'll have a different reaction, or we can knock this out, this part, or this gets damaged. We know that you know, and all the chemicals they give, you know, all the drugs change your mood. Clearly we know where consciousness comes from, right? So as soon as you get to that level, then everything gets drained of its meaning. What's the meaning of love? What's the meaning of God? Oh, it's the God gene. You know, we stimulate it. You know what I mean? Can you imagine living in that kind of world? Where it is nothing but just a whole bunch of molecules and atoms moving around, you know? Nothing really has any meaning, you know? Oh, we can still have, you know, feelings of kindness and everything. Yeah, it doesn't mean anything. It's no more meaningful than some other guy's blind rage, and, you know, that's just another chemical reaction. You see? So this is the demoniac vision. They try to drain out anything sacred from the world, or even anything personal. The personality is gone. Whereas the devotees see just the opposite. They see personality everywhere. They see Krishna's there as the super soul. Even the earth, the water, the air, there's a person behind it. There's Bhumi, there's Varuna, there's Vayu, there's Surya, isn't it? There's a person behind even the ordinary things we see. It's not just water moving there. It's not an accident that an earthquake happened, you know, over here or there, that the hurricane came. There's this conscious element behind it, fulfilling certain karma, good karma, bad karma. Isn't that how we're supposed to see? There's no accident. The accident means you just don't know the cause. It's probably cause. So you see the different vision. When we see the hand of God in everything, every movement of the blade of grass, when we every breath that we take is a prayer, and a prayer of gratitude. Oh, I have one more breath to take, one more step I can take in service of Krishna. That's the devotional vision. That's the yogic vision. There's not a moment, you know. Just as there's no place in this world, this creation, where Krishna isn't. Isn't that what Paramatma means? Every atom, he's in the every atom. That means there's consciousness everywhere. So maintaining that vision is possible when you're consciously trying to use everything in Krishna's service. You're connecting it, both just by seeing, by using all the hand, whatever you can bring into his service. That's what's being talked about here. And that's a practical way of doing it. Just by sitting and meditating on it, we're not going to get it. Okay, let's go through this. Some nice points in this purport. Ishvara Sarvabhute. Now, I'm probably to quote this verse very often about the Paramatma in everyone's soul, everyone's heart. Okay. Dogar Brahman, he's quoting fifth chapter, previous chapter, famous Vidya Vinaya Sampane. And the distinction, we're all pervasive throughout our own little body, our own little universe. But we're individual. I don't know your body or anyone else. Super soul knows everything. Everyone's body. the mother and maintainer. You know, he says that Mata Data Pitama in the ninth chapter. He'll say, I'm the mother, I'm the father, I'm the grandfather of everyone. And we can see Krishna that way. He's the maintainer. Yeah.
I had a question about, I was thinking of this a lot actually, but so you just said you don't know my thoughts or you don't know inside of me, but there's certain mystic cities that can give you that power to know what people are thinking, to know what's going on inside of them. I was wondering.
Yeah, those exist. Yeah, reading minds. But you can't, you can know something, but not everything of what someone else knows. You know, just like even now, I mean, you can talk on the phone. I know what you're thinking at that moment, you know, but it's very minimal compared to your whole experience of being.
Maybe it's just a subtle, like, frequency thing.
Yeah, there's, you know, all these yogic powers, they're subtle material powers, you know, and just like all the things they've invented in the last 20 years. Yeah. If you go to 1991 and you would describe what they're going to have in 2011, no one would believe it. You know, just the, you know, the nano, you know, the little nano. They have the drones, right? But they have nano drones that can just, you know, fly around and spy on you. You know, I mean, who knows what, you know, what advances they made in just the medical field in the last 20 years? If they would describe to you that, I just read that they got a vaccine now that looks very hopeful for, you know, for conquering cancer. I mean, of course they've said that before, but I mean, this really had some result. You know, and all the science and everything and understanding that went into making that vaccine, you know. So but you know, the yogic thing, it's a subtle, you know, it's another kind of material power. But it's very amazing. But still, you can't know everything about someone, you know. All right, let's go through a few things. All right, so this, you know, the energies of Krishna, you know, the internal, the external, the marginal, this will come up in the next chapter a lot. And in this way, by you know, reading Bhagavad Gita and seeing the world and ourselves through the eyes of the Gita, we can come to this vision, at least theoretically and ultimately practically. We can actually see that way at every moment. Everything in Krishna, and Krishna in everything. Which is what the next verse is all about. Yomam pashyati sarvatra sarvam cha mahi pashyati tasyam na pranashyami Satamena pranashyati. The one who sees me everywhere and sees everything in me, I am never lost, nor is he ever lost to me. This is one of the few verses that rhyme. It rhymes in the Sanskrit, and they made it so it rhymes in the English too. A lot of devotees, they like this verse. It's easy to memorize. Purport. A person in Krishna consciousness certainly sees Lord Krishna everywhere, and he sees everything in Krishna. Such a person may appear to see all separate manifestations of the material nature, but in each and every instance he is conscious of Krishna, knowing that everything is a manifestation of Krishna's energy. Nothing can exist without Krishna, and Krishna is the Lord of everything. This is the basic principle of Krishna consciousness. I'll read that again. Nothing can exist without Krishna, and Krishna is the Lord of everything. This is the basic principle of Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness is the development of love of Krishna, a position transcendental even to material liberation. At this stage of Krishna consciousness, beyond self-realization, the devotee becomes one with Krishna in the sense that Krishna becomes everything for the devotee and the devotee becomes full in loving Krishna. An intimate relationship between the Lord and the devotee then exists. In that stage, the living entity can never be annihilated, nor is the personality of Godhead ever out of the sight of the devotee. To merge in Krishna is spiritual annihilation. A devotee takes no such risk. It is stated in the Brahma Samhita 538. Premanjana chudita bhakti vilochanena santak sadaiva vidyeshu vilokayanti yang shyama sundana machindu gunaswarupam govindamani purusham tamaham vajami. I worship the primeval Lord Govinda, who is always seen by the devotee whose eyes are anointed with the pulp of love. He is seen in his eternal form as Shyama Sundar, situated within the heart of the devotee. At this stage, Lord Krishna never disappears from the sight of the devotee, nor does the devotee ever lose sight of the Lord. In the case of a yogi who sees the Lord as a Paramatma within the heart, the same applies. Such a yogi turns into a pure devotee and cannot bear to live for a moment without seeing the Lord within himself. So this is a wonderful state to see Krishna in everything. And one of the things I wanted to mention that came up in the purport that Krishna becomes everything for the devotee, and the devotee becomes full of loving Krishna. Somehow or other, that phrase reminded me of the passage in the 9th canto where Durvasa goes up to see Narayan, and Narayan says, "You know, I don't know the Sanskrit yet. Aham bhakta paradhino. I am not independent of my bhakta. I'm controlled by my devotee. You know, I'm not independent. I can't save you." Narayan was saying, "I cannot save you. You'll have to go back down to Ambarish." Vishnu, who's all powerful, right? He says, "I can't do it." So this is the very important thing to remember, and it comes out so much in the Brihadbhagavatamrita. You know, Sanatana Goswami, again and again, he describes how Krishna is you know, moved so much by the love of his devotees. As much as the devotee is anxious to please Krishna and to serve Krishna, Krishna is the same, reciprocating exactly. You know, otherwise, how are we going on from day to day? You know, Krishna is helping us, you know, to get up in the morning and chant his name. But that reciprocation is so important to remember. Exactly proportional, even more so. You know, yaya dama tam tadaiva bhajamyam. And it's so, you know, so wonderful. He uses that word bhajami. I worship them. Bhajami means to worship. Bhaj, you know. Bhakti. So, you know, it's not just that it's a service to Krishna and he's just standing up there and he doesn't really have time for us. He, just as much as we're personally involved in serving him, he's also reciprocating. That's such a wonderful thing, you know, because everyone, I mean, just on a material level, you know how important it is to be able to love someone and to be loved by them. You know, everyone's searching for that. If you have no money, but you have someone who loves you and you love them, you know, people go on somehow. But the richest person, if they're alone, it's like a void in their life, right? So that, you know, of course, materially, it's tragic. You cannot be fulfilled materially. The greatest love affair, or even love of the parents or the children, ultimately breaks and is empty. But that need is real for the soul, and is fulfilled in Krishna. You know, that not just the wonderful pleasure of loving Krishna, but also feeling his reciprocation. It's not a myth. That's the reality. All of this stuff here is the dream, right? We've been reading it every morning. It's just a reflection. So that's, and then the idea of seeing. And so this is all about seeing. How, you know, this last few verses, through that purified vision, seeing differently. Seeing Krishna in everything, seeing yourself in relation to Krishna. And, of course, this famous verse, the most famous, about seeing Krishna within the heart. Premandanachadita bhakti vilochanena. That by developing this love for Krishna, one eventually comes to the point of never being separated. Always seeing Krishna within one's heart and feeling connected. And at the same time, seeing him in everyone else's heart and working so that they can develop that vision as well. You know, that's what preaching is all about. Okay, any final discussion? Kind of coming, yeah, kind of missed. I'm excited about it. Well, somehow I was reading this verse of Dhruva. You know, that how, you know, he's appreciating when he sees Vishnu. Vishnu comes down. You know, Dhruva meditated for 6 months, you know, and at the end of that time he's chanting the holy name, and then Vishnu eventually comes down, and he has these series of prayers. And somehow this prayer this morning was coming to me, and I looked it up, and I said, Bhakti muhupa bahatam trahime pasango, bhuyad ananda mahatam amalashayanam. So he's praying, you know, what benediction does he want? So here's the benediction. He says, let me have the association of those devotees, pure devotees, whose devotion is flowing like a river. Pravahatam is a powerful river. Bhakti mahopavahatam trahime prasango. Let me have the close association of them. Bhuyat ananta mahatam, O unlimited Lord. Mahatam Amalashayanam. These great souls, Mahatmas, whose hearts are completely pure. Amala Ashayanam. By their association, I will easily be able to cross over this ocean of birth and death, which is filled with blazing fire-like dangers. Because I am becoming mad to hear the nectar of your katha. And in that association, I will hear that great katha, you know. So this is our form of yoga, by which we can come to experience all the things here, is by associating with devotees, or, you know, each other, and with great devotees through Prabhupada's books and other ways, and becoming mad, really extremely anxious to always be absorbed in the sound, this transcendental sound vibration. That is our yoga practice. That is how we can become absorbed like this, become in samadhi like this. It really is there for us. But we have to purify the heart so we really want it and nothing else. You had some final comment?
Yeah, I was just going to say it's really nice in Krishna book. There's a lot of pastimes where Krishna is worshipping his devotees. I really like those.
Yeah, the one that comes to mind is Sudama, especially. Where, you know, Sudama, I had the picture last night. Where Sudama comes and, you know, he's this little skinny Brahmin, you know, in rags, basically. But he takes him right into the palace and puts him on the bed of the, you know, and he washes his feet and Rukmini, the goddess of fortune.
He's crying.
Yeah, that's a great pastime. Yeah, that's good. Thank you. All glory to Srila Prabhupada.